Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Douglas Ferguson, the president of Voltage Control and the author of Magical Meetings, and we're going to talk about meetings today. This episode is brought to you by Around, video calls designed for collaboration, not meetings. Round's lightweight, beautiful, and fun interface automatically frees up your screen. It's perfect for design sessions, crits, and brainstorms. Just search for Around_HQ on Twitter. You'll see that the design community is obsessed with the tool. Try it out free at around.co/UIBreakfast. Hi, Douglas.
Hi, good to be here.
We're excited. We're so excited in this digital era to pick your brain about, you know, techniques that can help us every day.
Yeah, you know, we are all in meetings and some are productive and some aren't. And we spend a lot of time thinking about what makes great meetings. And it's really at the core of the work we do around helping enterprises scale, accelerate, and sustain innovation. And so we decided to put a book together really focused on that core issue around meetings, because it all really stems from that point. If we're not coming together in a way that we can collaborate and work the best that we can, then we're not going to achieve any of our goals.
Give us a bit of your background, what you personally, where you come from, and what Voltage Control does, so that you ended up being, you know, the professionals in meeting facilitation and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Started my career in the mid-90s writing software. And early in my career as an engineer, I had this experience where we had provisional patents and had really cornered the market on online analytics. We were one of the first to do pixel-based tracking, which is, you know, privacy concerns these days. So maybe you can come back and thank us and our colleagues. But the lesson I learned in that moment was that we had a competitor, Omniture, and they came out of nowhere and just started stealing customers. And what we realized was they were creating a better user experience. We didn't really call it user experience back then, but they were really creating a more delightful moment for the user. And we had been focused on the technology, and we had more sophisticated reports. We had deeper capability, yet we were losing clients because their product was more pleasant to use. And, you know, I started to think about this notion of, you know, the not technology for technology's sake, you know, doesn't serve anyone. And it doesn't matter how sophisticated and how cool and eloquent it is. If there's not a market demand for it, we don't have a product. And also, if we haven't designed something that really meets the user where they're at, really solves a core problem or is fun to use, then we also have a problem. And so kind of really focused my career on how to balance that three-legged stool. How do we account for those things and make sure that as we build teams, we got folks that are thinking about those different things, that are oriented to solve for each of the sides of the equation. And through that journey, was really curious about how we bring together these disparate points of view to collaborate as best we can. And, you know, went through lots of different techniques, starting with extreme programming early in my career, and then moving through Agile and Scrum and Lean. And my last startup was funded by Google Ventures, and we were using design sprints. I had, you know, followed Jake Knapp's blog post and was communicating with him remotely. And then serendipitously, Google Ventures invested in our startup, and Jake got to come work directly with us. So we turned that pen pal relationship into an in-person relationship and really dove deeply into the design sprint process, which we found great results with. And then when I left Twyla to start Voltage Control, my original vision was I was going to be a fractional CTO. So I was going to help companies that couldn't afford a full-time CTO, but wanted somebody who had a lot of experience and could, you know, draw from that experience and provide advice and guidance and coaching. And what I found was, you know, listening to the customer, that a lot of people were really interested in design sprints and the some of these collaboration techniques I was using, how I was helping teams become more effective and work together, and these cultural shifts that were made possible by some of the techniques I was bringing. And so I really leaned into that. And that's what we do, you know, exclusively today. We help enterprises scale, accelerate, and sustain innovation. And we do that through cultural shifts and really focusing on how teams can work best together. And that's where ultimately the focus on meetings came about, because we were looking at, well, where are people struggling? And ultimately, if we're going to collaborate, it's happening in meetings. I mean, there's some asynchronous collaboration happening, but that's still a meeting decision. Are we going to meet, or are we going to do this asynchronously?
Absolutely. And please also mention that you run a giant community of meeting facilitators. So it's not like your angle, right? But something that's the core of your business is meeting facilitation.
Absolutely. You know, it's when I was on my journey with Voltage Control in the very early days, I was following this thread, this passion, as folks were asking about design sprints and having us facilitate. I became more curious about how these facilitation techniques that I saw happening in the design world echoed some of the stuff that I knew from being a CTO and the agile community, and, you know, things that our agile coaches are doing. And then I had some colleagues that were kind of creatives in the architectural space, and I knew they had techniques and things they used. Then I bumped into a colleague who was a practitioner in the social justice and healthcare, the mental health space. And she was using a framework called Liberating Structures. And I instantly fell in love with this framework. And in doing so, I started to get really curious about this notion that if those exist for those disciplines, what else is out there? And that led me to finding game storming and, you know, thinking wrong, authentic relating, the art of gathering. I mean, the primes, it goes on and on. There's so many of these things that people have developed. And the thing I noticed was there were these common values. We're going to hold space. We're going to take care of people. We're going to make it safe to come together, to collaborate and create and get ideas done. You know, so many of these things are built on just the foundational kind of improv type of yes and activities. And a lot of them are tailor fit for certain industries. You know, they've adapted for their needs. But we don't need to solely look at our own industry, because there's so much that's happening in other industries that we can learn from and borrow from. This is like really interesting notion of innovation, where it's something like 70% of innovations already existed, but they existed in a different industry. And so, you know, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel, let's go look and see what's happening elsewhere. I found this other concern of mine, which was in all these amazing disciplines, they were also insular and siloed, in the sense that, you know, there's this phenomenon when someone finds this stuff and they're able to unlock the potential in teams, it is so uplifting and inspiring that, you know, there's a special place in your heart when you learn these tools and frameworks. And you tend to hold a higher regard for the first one you find, because it's like, that's your identity. That's who you are. But there's a concern there, which is that can lead to dogma. And so my goal was to stitch together these different communities. How can I bust these silos between these different disciplines, whether it's design thinking, whether it's the architectural world, the charrettes, the liberating structures, authentic relating. We even had a cuddle therapist at our cuddle facilitator at our conference this year. And so when I say wide array busting silos, I mean, we want to see it all. And we're curious how people are showing up to help other people through facilitated techniques and what they are and how we can compare and contrast.
Let's talk about what you preach in your book, The Magical Meetings. And we all do more meetings than we used to, and all of them are virtual these days. So what is your thinking, you know, mindset that we should all adopt when it comes to daily meetings that we take at work?
Well, We got a lot of tips. The book is actually called The Non-Obvious Guide to Magical Meetings, and it's part of a series of non-obvious guides that are pretty incredible. You know, their slogan is, it's like having a coffee with an expert. So the idea is that it's really distilled down, really actionable information. And so it's a guidebook and, you know, full of mindsets and tips. And, you know, I'll share a few here today. And, you know, I would say maybe the most important one is this idea of purpose. And, you know, I think in the pre-show chat, we talked a little bit about naming meetings. And this kind of dovetails with this idea of purpose, because if we get really crisp and really clear in our name, what we type into the meeting invite, so that when someone receives an email saying that you want to connect with them on Wednesday, that they really understand why. And it's not just a let's meet. Also, meetings tend to have a way of building up like a history, or like there's a cultural norm around certain kinds of meetings, right? So this might be a weekly meeting that you have, like a staff meeting or an update meeting or whatever. And a lot of times these lose their purpose because they've been so culturally ingrained that we just kind of do it robotically on auto repeat without really challenging the value or really articulating the why. And so revisiting these things, taking inventory of what you're doing and why you're doing it and being very crisp will allow us to decide or even detect if this thing is not serving us, and we can stop having it. Also, if it is serving us, then we can be in honor of that purpose, right? We can really focus the design and focus our activities. We can also make better decisions on who to invite to the meeting, who not to invite into the meeting. And then also, if someone sees more clearly the purpose, either through a description or better naming, then they can opt out. They don't think they're going to be able to provide value, or the meeting is not going to allow them to do their job better. And then also people can opt in. They can say, oh, I need to come to that. I have some pertinent information, or I need to contribute to that conversation. I think also in the vein of like whether you should have a meeting, we made a little chart, which was like, it's called the should we have this meeting test. And one of the things is this meeting truly informative? Then we probably shouldn't have it. And, you know, there's a lot of like memes going around, like this meeting could have been an email. And, you know, there's a lot of pushback on that. And because I think people want to meet, and there's kind of connection and whatnot from meetings. But I will say that if a meeting is truly informative and we're not doing any, there's no decisions being made, there's no exploration happening, then, and we're not generating ideas, then we probably could create that, spread that information some other way. One of my favorite ways to do that would be Loom, because you can record a quick video, click on the button, and then immediately send the link out to the team. And it's very personable. You don't have the feedback loop. That's where some folks will complain about the asynchronous updates, is because you don't get the feedback loop. And I'll say this, if your argument is that you're having the update meeting, the status meeting, because of feedback, the feedback loop, then make sure that you actually observe yourself and hold yourself accountable for that feedback. Because if you're just showing up and doing it live and not actually incorporating in the design any questions or feedback or any interaction, then it could have just been a video you recorded. Someone could have watched it at 2x speed, or, you know, whenever it was really convenient for them. You know, ultimately, I think that there's this desire for folks to want to come together and connect and meet. The BBC even released a report saying that most ineffective meetings are actually a form of therapy, which is really incredible to think about. And my advice is that let's honor that concept. You know, let's not deprive the team of this therapy that they need, this connection that they need, especially in this time of remote work where we can't just serendipitously have the water cooler encounter. You know, if you crave connection, even if it's subconscious, you might get up and just walk around and see who you bump into. Or it may just, before you even crave it, it might just happen because you were going to the bathroom and then coming back, and or you were coming back from lunch and you saw some folks. And so if we need to artificially create that, let's do it and let's honor that purpose, but not let it just seep into our everyday minutiae of movements in just a unintentional way. Because if we're unintentional about it, it probably means that we're wasting time. We're probably not having the best connections we could have, and it's probably getting in the way of doing good work. And so let's reserve the time. Let's reserve the right amount of time. Let's measure it. Let's gauge it. And also let's optimize the interactions so that people are getting the most connection they can have. Like if we honor that sense of connection, we can design in some things, whether it's, you know, games or questions or conversations that are well crafted so that people come out with that sense of connection even more deeply.
Tell us about your before, during, and after framework. And, you know, these words come up all the time in when you need to explore case studies, when you're doing jobs to be done and things like that. So once again, how do you use before, during, and after when you brainstorm your next meeting?
Yeah, so the book is broken up into before the meeting, during the meeting, after the meeting. And ultimately, you know, I just think that's a fantastic framework to make sure that we are considering the meeting from all angles. So before the meeting, you know, is about preparation. It's about also about what does my participants need to know before they walk through the door. I'm a big fan of Priya Parker, and one of the things she talks about is that your event doesn't start when they walk through the threshold. Your event starts the moment they become aware of the event. That's the moment that you set that seed for them, and they start to make assumptions, and they start a relationship with you, right? And so what you send ahead of time, what you ask them to do, how you frame the things, you know, I'm not a huge fan of pre-work or homework because people often don't do it. And then if people don't do it, they walk into the session at a disadvantage. You know, we've created an uneven playing field from the very beginning. But the one thing I'll say is I really love this idea of creating pre-work that doesn't require any work. And so what I mean by that is, yeah, so I'll plant a seed, right? I'll ask a question or drop a little hint or idea down so that I place something into their subconscious that they're going to walk around with. And then when we have the conversation together, when we kick off the session, now they've already, you know, chewed on that for a little bit, and we can unpack it together, and we can have out of the gate a little bit more of deeper conversation. So these are the kinds of things that I'm thinking about before the meeting. And it's not only preparation. We love to talk about preparing like a surgeon. So we want to have all our things in the right place. We want to have our tech figured out. We want to know if we're doing breakout rooms, if it's random, or if it's specific and assigned. We're going to select the right participants. We're going to really get clear on our purpose and make sure that everything is ready to go. Sometimes I might have meetings before the meeting. You know, I might need to interview some of my participants. We used to love to do this at startups for our board meetings. If we were going to walk into any sticky conversations, we knew what was going to happen and we were prepared for it. So we weren't caught off guard. So that can be really helpful to, you know, depending on the meeting, if we need to ensure we've got the right people in the room, and also what some of their concerns, where they might be coming from. And then during the meeting, gosh, there's so many things, right? Like, you know, just making sure that we hold space for folks, that we're allowing everyone an opportunity to contribute and share. Also, one of our meeting mantras, we developed 10 meeting mantras to help people think about, you know, good meeting practices and good meeting hygiene. And one of the mantras that I'm really fond of is do the work in the meeting. And if we can create ways where we are actually doing work in the meeting, it's so much more fun. It's so much more engaging and feels so much more productive. Imagine that the meeting is just talking about a bunch of stuff, and then you have to go do the work. You know, then you kind of feel like, well, that the meeting is just so much more boring and it seems so much less necessary. And when I say do the work, you know, we could have a Google Doc, a Mural or Miro or some other tool open and together collaboratively working in the tool, in the document. If we are talking about a pitch that we need to make to investors, why not have Google Slides or even some document open where we're working on an outline? When I'm working on slides, I love to use slides to make my outline. So I'll just like make really, really rough slides that, you know, here's A, B, and C. So I see that narrative arc unfolding in front of me. And then now I've got placeholders for each step that I just turn into the real thing. And so these prototypes, which is what I like to refer to them as, these kind of early draft versions of things, can be a great tool to do the work in the meeting. And we've got so many awesome software packages these days. Figma is one of my big favorites lately. We've even started to use Figma for all our marketing materials. And we can literally open it up in our meeting where we're kind of talking about maybe some different ways we might go around some new ad program or maybe some new asset we're working on. And we can literally pull it up and look at it and talk about it and change it and see how we react to it. So this is not a replacement for deep individual work. That still happens. But anytime we can come together and kind of collectively create a focal point in some sort of output that we're creating together, will make a meeting much more magical.
As you come from a product background, and you've talked a lot about dedicating, setting a purpose for the meeting and naming it right, could you give us examples of the most popular, you know, meeting types that we can apply in daily life?
That's a great concept that you brought up, this notion of types of meetings. And that's one of the things we encourage people to do in our workshop for Magical Meetings. We have this tool we call Meeting Culture Redesign. And it's a template that teams can go through. And then one of the first things they do in this template is to do an inventory on their meeting types. So what I usually recommend people do is to look at their calendar, maybe, you know, a couple months, maybe 6 months total, back in history and say, all right, what are the types of meetings we're having? So, you know, in a Scrum Agile world, they typically will have, you know, sprint planning, they'll have retros, they'll have, you know, they might have a demo. I used to really love to do test fests, and this is where we bring together, you know, a good chunk of the company, if not the whole company, to just like really get in and play around with the new version and kind of just without a test plan, just random kind of testing, explorative stuff. And it's a great way to socialize change and in a playful social way. And so every organization's different. You have a culture. It's about documenting it, stepping back, looking at it and saying, well, what things are serving us? Which of these meetings are magical? Which are terrible? And which ones are just normal? Then we usually advise people to focus on the normal meetings, how they can make those meetings magical, because the terrible ones are, you know, maybe we shouldn't even be having them, but let's at least see some early quick wins that we can celebrate, get some internal case studies on how these improvements are helping us. And then the momentum starts to build. So, you know, ultimately you can, if you're struggling for what to name something, you can think about just putting creation session at the end. If you're trying to create something, you know, what are we trying to create? We're trying to create a pitch deck. So maybe it's pitch deck creation session, you know, like these don't have to be super fancy names that are, you know, feel like trademark brand names, but just get descriptive enough so people know what's going to happen. And let's be really clear about it.
How about some traditional types, let's say for a team of co-founders, like I'm finding myself in, we find it valuable to get together every Monday and set, you know, our common goals for the week. And you just mentioned that this can be done asynchronously, but what we're looking for is that, you know, time of, you know, team unity, a little bit of water cooler chat and then work that we find valuable. So Is that a productive way? How can we make that into a truly magical meeting?
Yeah. You know, I think honoring the purpose is first and foremost, right? So if the purpose is to, you know, we're remote, we don't see each other every day. We want to have this point where we can come together and feel connected. Let's really honor that sense of connection. We have a meeting at Voltage Control every week called the Weekly Sync. The purpose is just to sync the team. And we don't talk about tasks. We don't talk about work. We literally share out things that we're proud of, accomplishments that we've just made, things we're looking forward to. And if we need any help, if we want to make a request to the team, it's a space to do that. And then each week we have some fun trivia fact. So like last week, we shared our favorite game. So everyone, you know, picked a game that was their favorite game, whether it's, you know, a board game, card game, or a video game. And then we go into a moment where we share out who has been living the values of the company. And whoever won the values award the previous week is the person that announces the new winner, and then they'll announce the next winner.
I love that.
Yeah. And so it's a moment for us to all share what's kind of going on with us, kind of what we're excited about, where we're stuck. So it's a little bit of a, you know, dev stand-up inspired there, but I shifted some of the language so that we could get a little more personal and wouldn't be so focused on the work. Cause we all know, we can all go in Trello and see what's happening. We all have like sidebars when we need them. I wanted to make sure this was really focused on how we come together and kind of in a sense of unity and fun and really connect. And so it's like, we tried to make it a little bit playful, and then also really big believer in really focusing on your values, and having a weekly conversation about the values and who's living them is important.
However, I do have an objection there, because sometimes it feels when you just get together for the sake of, you know, fun, it stops being fun just because you made it an objective, and it only is fun when it's like a byline for something else. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that?
Yeah, I think part of it's like the facilitation is a key, you know, and the point isn't to be laborious and like, okay, we're having fun. It reminds me of my high school chemistry teacher. We were going to have like an end of the year party, which is like probably cookies and Kool-Aid or something. I remember her, she had her roll book out and she was taking roll call and making, you know, attendance or whatever. And she slams it shut with a lot of drama and says, "Let's party." And I was like, oh wow, I think I even laughed out loud and got in trouble. But I always think back to that, which is like, from a facilitation standpoint, we can never force people to do something. We can only invite them, and we can set the conditions. I think the thing that really adds the levity is that the prompt that we bring each week is a little bit of a surprise, and we try to come up with things that people might share out, something that's unpredicted, and that typically gets the team excited because you're learning something strange and fun about people. And because we shifted the prompts away from the task-oriented, what I'm doing, where I'm stuck, and opened it up where it's a bit more personal, people are sharing some personal stories around, you know, what's kind of surface for them. So what they're proud of is not always something Voltage Control related, you know, sometimes it's related to other things they have going on in their life. And so just creating that moment of connection and really focusing the prompts in ways that open people up. And even as a leader, how you show up and the energy you bring is going to impact how everyone responds. And so I think that is one of the core tenets of facilitation, is modeling the behavior you want to see in the space. And so I think that's maybe one of the more critical elements of holding space for fun. And also, here's the thing, we have to read the room and we have to think about what's happening. If there's something on the news that's disturbing, or, you know, that's occupying everyone's thoughts, then, you know, the weekly sync's not going to be a rah-rah fun cheerleader peppy kind of thing. And we just need to hold space for that and let people show up how they're showing up. And that is also a sense of connection and community that we can foster and embrace and be there for the team. And I think that, you know, it's just about being aware of those things and kind of, you know, being willing to adapt.
We haven't quite touched on the after component yet, but I'd love you to, because in my experience, and I talk to a lot of people, I don't know, partners, contractors, and what really makes a person shine is how they follow up on the meeting. So what is your advice on that?
Yeah, we talk about narratives, and we actually love to wrap up a meeting with something called Guardians of Change, or just building a shared narrative. So at the end of the session, who else needs to know about what we accomplished or what we did? And what about the people that report to us? What about our other peers? What about our clients? What about our bosses? Like, you know, up, down, sideways, like all the people in the universe. You could even think about it from the perspective of a RACI chart, like, you know, like this project that we're talking about, who's responsible, accountable, who needs to be consulted, who needs to be informed. Like, that can be a nice lens into thinking about who might need to know. And then let's talk about what we need to tell them. Now, a lot of meetings suffer from a lack of alignment, and that's where a lot of conflict comes from. And so we usually like to focus opening meetings with a real focus on alignment. And, you know, if you think about a design sprint, it's a 5-day meeting and the whole first day is spent on alignment. So it's a critical thing to think about. Now, some of the best facilitators even miss out on is this notion of, like, once you get alignment, assuming that you have it and you're good to go. And it's one of those things where you have to constantly test it and have to be constantly watching to see if someone's like veered off or deviated from the group. And this is really kind of linking language and paying attention to how people are saying things and if they're saying similar things but meaning different things. And so this is really, really critical at the end of the meeting, because if we don't make sure that we're still aligned and that we're all on the same page and it's the right page, and we get really, really clear, then there's a real, if we don't do that, there's a real danger that once we go out into the halls of the building or, you know, in other Zoom meetings, and we're talking about this program and what we accomplished and what's next and what's going to happen, there's a real risk that we say different things or that we're caught off guard. I remember talking to one of my clients, and, you know, one of the leaders from the workshop had bumped into the CEO, and he said, "How did it go?" And they said, "It was a lot of fun," which I found devastating when I heard, because we accomplished so much, but because they weren't prepared for what to say and how to talk about what was accomplished, they went to a space of emotion. So being prepared to talk about what happened after the meeting and what that narrative is and being clear on it can really help us make sure we spread the message correctly and consistently, because if it's not consistent, it won't be robust and resilient. Also, feedback's really, really critical. We can't have magical meetings unless we make sure that we collect feedback. We know what people thought of the meeting. Do they think it was magical? Or do they think that, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do they sit on this thing? What are your roses and thorns and buds for that thing? All very critical. And also, we have to think about maintaining momentum post meeting too. And so, to your point, it's the follow up that needs to happen. It's the task that we said we were going to do. It's the cadence of kind of activities and functions and how it folds into our normal work stream of, you know, getting things done.
What do you think of meetings as a management tool when I, for example, as someone who doesn't have too much time, I get someone else from my team to have weekly meetings with me so that we have dedicated time and space to do something that's important to the company? Is it a good method?
I love it. You know, when I hear that you're doing the work in the meeting. So anytime that you can like plan time to say, we're going to work together. If you have a really great collaborator reserving that time, it's similar to this idea of the maker and manager calendars, right? And if you are a maker and a manager, you had to reserve your maker time, or else your management schedule is going to just like take control of everything. And so if you have a collaborator, that you love to make with and they really inspire you and you get stuff done together, then carving that out's really important. I mean, it's the same thing as like, you wouldn't just hope to serendipitously bump into your therapist or your coach. You reserve the time because it's important, and you know, it's going to make you more effective. It's going to get you that growth you're looking for. And so, yeah, I highly recommend people scheduling time either to make together with others or to make solo, because you got to schedule that work time, even if it's a meeting with yourself.
As we're wrapping up today's episode, what are the resources, books, well, yours, of course, and the others, some blogs, anything else that people can investigate when, if they're interested in more meeting techniques?
Yeah, well, certainly we have a lot of stuff on the blog at voltagecontrol.com, and we're releasing posts maybe 3 or 4 times a week, and definitely check that out. If you go to magicalmeetings.com, there's a bunch of resources on that page, including specific blog posts about meeting culture. I'm about to start a new series called the Magical Meeting Stories, where I'm going to highlight magical meetings people have designed, meetings they're really proud of, where they've done cool stuff for specific purposes. So be on the lookout for that. It's starting up here pretty soon. And we have a Magical Meetings course at voltagecontrol.com that's a complement to the book, as well as a live workshop that we do every few months. So at voltagecontrol.com/events, you can sign up for any of our public workshops and to go deeper with the facilitator-led live session. So yeah, would love to hear from folks. And we also have a free event every Thursday called Facilitation Lab. So anyone wanting to like watch how people run different kinds of interactive sessions or even test things out themselves, it's an opportunity to come and play and practice with a group of, you know, like-minded learning mindset kind of folks.
I'd love a piece of advice for you. So I find personally meetings like, you know, weekly workshops and things like that, that require presence of many people, quite daunting to see on my calendar, because it feels like a weight of responsibility. What if, I don't know, my kids get sick and I can't attend and I'm facilitating a meeting for hundreds of people? What am I going to do? How to overcome that stress?
Wow. Yeah. You know, that's a tough one. We have folks at the company that are backups, and we generally will have a scribe who is doing technical facilitation and helping keep things documented along the way. They could step up. We've also got backups that can step in, but you know, that's not always the case if you're a lone facilitator at a company. And I think at the end of the day, you know, things happen, right? You know, you never know when there might be an accident or you have to rush to the hospital to meet a family member or a loved one. And that could be anything, you know. It could be, you could have a meeting with an investor that's really important. You could have an important doctor's appointment that you just had to miss. And at the end of the day, the world is full of caring and understanding people. And if you have to cancel it and reschedule it, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I even once had a flight get canceled. And then the only flight that could get me to Boston was leaving from Houston. So I jumped into an Uber to Houston and jumped on that flight with like, whoa, only like 5 minutes to spare or something, you know? And so sometimes it all just comes together by the skin of our teeth, and sometimes it doesn't work out. And I think we just got to first and foremost give ourselves some flexibility and care for ourselves, because if we don't show up, there's a really awesome quote from the founder of Theory U that says, "The success of any intervention is directly correlated to the internal conditions of the intervener." The best advice I have is that more than likely this random event's not going to come up, right? And you're going to be able to do it. And so spend your time worrying about how to just crush it and make it awesome. And so that the anxiety doesn't find its way into the meeting.
That's a great piece of advice. Thanks so much, Douglas, for joining us today. It's been great, and good luck with your book launch, which should be live by the time this is live.
Yeah, and thanks for having me, and it's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
Likewise. Thanks so much.